I am someone who like uses my body to turn up on the state when I can.
The hour I could spend convincing this person to use a secure platform, I could just be using that hour to train people who've already sort of arrived to that place of, yeah, fuck them. Like, I'm gonna provide care for this person because they need it.
I needed some care and some support. I needed some money and I didn't have it. And I wanted to be that kind of doula with those things in mind, so that I could try to give people the abortions that I should have had and not the ones that I did have.
You are listening to Abolition-ish, a Black politics and culture podcast at the end of the world, or so we are led to believe. These episodes are recorded virtually via Riverside FM from Mexico City, Mexico, and I am humbled to be your host. My name is John Moore, and you can follow me on Twitter at Incivility. That's INCIVILITEA. You can also follow me on Instagram at that handle, but it's mostly puppies and newts. The Abolitionish podcast and our monthly zine and notes are produced by Johannesburg-based agender artist and astrologer in training, Who's Wiley, aka Featuring Wiley. And you can follow them on Twitter at Who's Wiley. That's WHOSWYLEE. You should also hit up their TikTok at Venusian Wannabe and get your celestial shit together. That TikTok handle is VENUSIANWANNABE. We would also fail to function without our social media director, Bug, who lives in Philly. I am so hype and sobered and sober to be here with y'all for episode 3 of season 3. I have the honor of being joined by abortion doula, organizer, and disabled dance maker, Ash Williams, by way of Western North Carolina. You can follow him on Twitter at Ash_Bash23. That's ASH_BASH23. Originally from Fayetteville, Ash is a member of the Mountain Area Abortion Doula Collective, which helps people in Western North Carolina with fundraising, technical support, and childcare. He's also a former philosophy professor who taught and studied at UNC Charlotte, where he earned his master's in ethics and applied philosophy. Ash is an incredibly smart and strategic and sharp motherfucker who has been prepared to care for niggas without the legal protection of the decades-long precedent set by Roe v. Wade for many years. And trust, Ash is not stopping now. So, as we kick it today, Ash is going to reflect on becoming an abortion doula, what his organizing trajectory has been in the South before today, and what all of us can do right now to deliver care to the niggas in our lives who need it. So, sit back, kick your feet up. The floor is fucking lava, so please kick those fucking feet up and enjoy the ride. To get started, Ash, I'd love for you to just like introduce yourself however you want. You can talk about where you're from, where you are, what you do, who you are, whatever information you think would be helpful for listeners to understand where you're coming from and how you sort of arrived to this conversation.
Thank you for this opportunity. My name is Ash Williams. I use he and him pronouns. I'm from Fayetteville, North Carolina. I grew up there. And then I went to Charlotte to go to school. And so I spent 10 years there. And now I live in Western North Carolina. I am Black. I'm from around here, like where I still stay. I'm disabled. I'm a sibling and an organizer and a teacher and an abortion doula. And someone who like uses my body to turn up on the state when I can. I'm a dog person and a plant person and someone who likes to read. Yeah. I could say so much more. But
is there any news from your dog person, plant person life? Like, do we have any new plants or animals in our lives?
I repotted my snake plant recently. Any kind of repots are important for me. And I've been like this year, really just getting flowers to like see both on my altar and in my kitchen, like weekly. And that's something that really has like meant a lot to me this year. And my dog, Arthur, she will be 2 years this year, and it's exciting to see her like not be a puppy anymore. She's my first dog that I've like had like this and cared for like this on my own. And so my relationship with her is really growing, and I feel like I'm seeing like a new dog these days as she's like not so young anymore.
Anyone who knows my dog Milo knows I can't fucking wait till I can say the same thing. Because likewise, Milo's the first like puppy I've ever had. And he's still like puppyish. I think he's like about to be 10 months. So I can't wait. I can't wait. He's still going to be the same. I know that much. But that's beautiful that you're like seeing that new side. And I like what you said about the repot. I have never repotted a plant. It is something I just have to like face. It's super scary. Yeah. Do you remember the first plant you repotted?
No, but I know it probably didn't survive. I think that's what I worry about the repotting. Like they're doing well, and then you take them out of the container that maybe they needed to get out of, but it is to be seen if they will survive. I have a plant like that, like I'm looking at her and I'm like, okay, are you gonna make it? And the pot is really different. She's really different now, but I've had her like since the summer of 2020. And so I need her to keep going with me unless her work with me is done.
That's cool. Yeah, it's these moments you just wish they could speak. Like, please, mm-hmm. I don't wanna hurt you. Wait, so remind me, where did you say you went to school?
I went to the University of North Carolina at Charlotte for undergrad and my master's program. And at undergrad, I did philosophy and dance. And then for my master's, I did ethics and applied philosophy. Still a lot of dance classes. But
yeah, I remember when I was preparing, I'm sure I've seen dance stuff online that you shared before. But it was the one thing I was like, oh, they're a dancer. Like that was the one thing that I hadn't actually like. You know, the little sort of like dribble of someone's life you get through social media. I was like, oh, that's like a big part of their life. That's dope.
Yeah, it is. And it was when I was able to move differently in time and space. But I still definitely consider myself as a dancer. And I hope that other people do too.
That's really dope. You said applied philosophy too. What kind of things were you thinking about?
I was thinking about race and gender and sexuality. I was thinking about dance and corporeality. I was thinking about the movement for Black Lives and direct action. And I was trying to use dance vocabularies to articulate how I was seeing Black people use their bodies against the state. And I was trying to talk about these choreographies as resistance. And I think I was trying to, in terms of adding something to a pre-existing conversation, I thought that if we talked about it more like dance, I thought if we talked about direct action more like dance, then perhaps we would understand better like what the bodies are trying to articulate to what I called non-state and state audiences. I'm still thinking a lot about that project, and I feel like there are certain things that I'm like not thinking about anymore. But yeah.
Can I beg you to share one? Cause I'm talking with a poet later this week, and I'm petty and I like to ask questions like, what's the one thing you know for sure poetry can't do? So like, likewise, I'm interested like in the things that you mentioned like there are things you're not interested in anymore. In thinking through that project, like when you came out the other side, is there something that you're like, yeah, actually, no, like actually like thinking about this way doesn't do this, or like something that you really couldn't have expected on the other side, but coming out the project, you're like, actually, I see something differently.
There's a few things I'm thinking about, but one of the things is, I think, the container of the project. Like, I don't know that I should have been doing that in a philosophy program. I had some real desires to get a PhD in philosophy because I want to teach philosophy. And at the time, I understood that that's what you have to do. And I wasn't willing to do everything they said I had to do in order to be in alignment with the discipline. And when I look back at my project, I think and consider if I would have gotten more from it, if I wasn't doing it in a philosophy program. I consider like perhaps I should have been doing performance studies, but also like history of consciousness. I wonder about Black studies, like being the container for my project too, what I could have done or where I could be right now. But yeah, it feels really big to me, the container. And I think, so I was using both Bone Breaking and Ring Shout, which are two kind of ways of Black dance, or like modes of Black social dance that I think are different and similar in ways. I think I would like look at different forms of Black social dance. I don't think I would look at Bone Breaking. I'm not sure what I would put in its place, but I think there's something else there. And then I think I might have kept the Ring Shout though. I can't get away, or as I think about dance and choreographies of resistance, I cannot get away from things like circles and like moving in a circle, literally. And a Ring Shout like lets me talk about that, because chattel enslavement like lets me talk about that. And there are some ways that I think like my project wouldn't work in a dance theory program or something. But yeah, I continue to think about that. And I also continue to think about going back to school to pursue these ideas.
I'm processing that. Yeah, the circle is really interesting. It's interesting. Like, I'm just interested in that still resonating with you the way it is. Cause I think about, and especially like, you know, you're not just talking about like, you're being very specific and talking about choreography. So there seems to be like some foreground, it seems like some interest in like the chorus or the group or the, you know what I mean? Like not just like, you know, I'm going to write an autobiography about this one dancer. But like, I don't know, some interest in like the function and utility of it. Even if you're talking about the limits of it.
Yeah,
that's real. Well, yeah, that grad school shit will always be there, won't it, huh?
Well, that's what they say, but I don't know. It seems like the end of it is not. That's exciting to see too.
No, that's very fucking true, yo. I'm happy you said that, because I feel like that's kind of my refrain, you know. Well, so just a little background too, like I finished my master's in the PhD program at Berkeley, but then I left and I've been gone for a year. What's up?
I said, wait, you left?
Yeah, I'm not in grad school anymore. And it's kind of like I had this conversation with Deshaun too, because I guess I just don't tweet about it. But I'm not a grad student anymore. Yeah. So I'm technically still, so at Berkeley, you have to be gone, I think, for like 4 or 5 years until they push you out and you have to reapply, which is a long time compared to like, I know niggas who, if they're gone for a year, they have to like institute some formal process, which is true even before the pandemic, like truly brutal and ridiculous. So I'm technically, I guess I still have like another year or two to decide if I'm going to go back. So maybe that's why I'm always like, oh, it's still there. But when you said, oh, the end is nigh, I thought about it in two ways, because the end is nigh for me in the sense that my clock is running out. But also, hell yeah, like these formations are really imploding. and for good reason. But it's I mean, like, I've just been talking a lot recently with folks who are in my position or left after a master's or a bachelor's or thinking about going back or are obviously still in it. And so many of the Black folks I'm talking to, I feel like share this feeling of like, well, then what? You know, like, and not just like, well, where else can I be paid to do this? That's not even the question for a lot of brilliant niggas, I think, because when you're a brilliant nigga, you know that it's really just about doing a two-step somewhere, you know, like it's just about learning another grammar to kiss someone else's ass. But I think the bigger question is like, what other formation is gonna like, like incubate and feed my ideas? And I really think it's just niggas being like, fuck, I have to do this, don't I? Like, I have to create something, don't I? Which I've tried to not be afraid of. I've tried to be like, well, okay, like, if this is no longer sustainable, rather than write for the next decade about how unsustainable it is, let me just get the fuck out of here. But it's real. And
not like, let me go start a nonprofit either, you know? Like, right. A lot of people do that, and that's not an option, I don't think, for me. Just like maybe going to grad school is not an option maybe right now for me.
Yeah, no, I don't know if you've seen them. I forget what the name of this one I'm thinking of is, but there's like, I've seen one or two like mini startups of like grad students teaching courses together. You know what I'm talking about? Those kind of things. And it's like, I applied to one. And when they told me how much it would be, I was like, you fucking with me. You fucking with me. Like, how much they were going to pay. It was basically like a speaking engagement. It was basically like $250 or something for like a teaching. You would be teaching the class, like, I guess a total of like 4 hours total. But what was beguiling to me was I was like, what? First of all, what is a 4-hour class?
Right.
Two, what is prep like? Like, so I'm just supposed to shit out a 4-hour knowledge Rubik's Cube for y'all. And none of that would be compensated because it's just assumed that, oh, if you're a grad student, you've already been pummeled into the dirt so much, you have this unlocking key. I was like, y'all can eat my ass. But it just made me realize like, oh yeah, like we really don't know what the fuck we're doing. Like the moment we leave the academy and if we know the one thing we don't want to do is reproduce the university, that actually isn't much. Like, that's not a real substitute for imagination. Because it was like white people. It was non-Black people I know that were running it. And I was like, oh, this is clear. Because, like, the only person who would sign up to do this is someone who this actually isn't bread and butter for them. Like, they actually can't survive on this. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you think about your poetry work and your artwork, do you think, or how does that fit into your... to what you're doing right now and to like you having like left the program, I wonder.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I still think I'm figuring it out. So like when I left, I guess that was January of 2021, I started working at this speechwriting firm that I had interned for when I was in undergrad. And so I worked there for a year full-time remote. And now I do communications for Raheem, which is like they're an organization that is basically building like technology for mobile crisis units to talk to each other and dispatch people. And I've been doing that full time for like 2 months. But I'm also living in Mexico. I'm living in Mexico City. I was in Chicago before, and I was in the Bay before that. And I moved to Chicago to be closer to my family during the pandemic in Detroit. But so through all these stops, I've had a little more time to think about my poetry and write, especially because I just haven't been, you know, like when I was preparing for my master's, like just like reading fucking Manning Marable and like not having time to read shit I wanted. It's been really nice. Like, it's been really nice to have time to read poetry, especially because I struggle with poetry. I struggle reading. I'm really attention deficit. So like, getting through text is just not what it used to be, especially when there's no quick incentive or reward, you know, so no one's coming to pat me on my back for finishing the book. It's made me start thinking like, you know, and I love teaching too. That's the other thing. That's the other piece, right? It's like, I love teaching so much, But by the time I finished my master's, it was so clear what teaching was going to be like for me for the next few years. I was like, this is not worth it, especially in the Bay. You know, like I'm spending $2,000 a month on rent to have roommates, like bonkers. And it's only getting worse. So, this time has really been like helpful just thinking about like, where do I derive pleasure from? Where can I derive income from? How can I make those exclusive when they need to be? How can I let them not be exclusive when I want? Mm-hmm. And so we'll see, you know, like also I think for me, like I'm really interested in like Afro-pessimism in language. Mm-hmm. I'm interested in ontology and speech. And so if I did go back to school, I think it would have to be with a project in tow, you know, like,
okay,
I'm not trying to go back to have niggas whisper in my ear about what I should write about. Because it's all such bullshit anyway, you know, like we're all just spinning wheels. So it's like, if I go back, I want to go back with like a first draft of a dissertation to be like, hey, this is what I'm thinking about. Please give me feedback. And honestly, if that's not the case, if I don't have something that needs to be a book, even for me, then I don't think it makes sense for me. Mm-hmm. We'll see.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
Sharing all that.
Yeah, no, of course. Okay, so we're thinking of movement. And I would love for you to just walk us through, move us through, how he came to this work, you know, how you sort of became specifically the organizing you're doing now and your work as an abortion doula. What was like your first encounter with that as even a possibility?
Mm. I am thinking about the first time that I needed an abortion. I'm thinking about the support that I needed and didn't have. I'm thinking about the second time I needed an abortion and the support that I didn't have and needed, which included funding and other types of support. And by the second time I had an abortion, I was feeling like, okay, I need to do something different. I was also working for a reproductive justice organization at the time. And I was like, okay, so I can like be here and do some of my organizing work. I really wanted to focus on people in cages, Black people and trans people. Reproductive justice as a movement and a framework, it wasn't really that, or like me trying to like focus on that there was difficult for me. And I still felt really like connected to the framework, to the movement, but in this way that I was feeling, I still experienced a lot of alienation. I started to like seek out trainings to like learn how to be an abortion doula. I learned about the Louisville Doula Collective. And I heard about a training that they were doing in Greensboro. And that was like my first abortion doula training. And then fast forward a couple years later, I start working at an abortion fund in North Carolina. And there was a need to make sure that the people who worked with the people who we were providing abortion support for, that there was a need for like more care. And so I helped to develop an abortion doula training program there in 2019. And I trained over 100 doulas in North Carolina that summer, like through this program. From there, I was like, oh, I'm on to something. And I was like, I'm onto something, and I don't know if an abortion fund or a reproductive justice nonprofit is the right, again, container for the kind of care work that I want to do. And so I started doing abortion doula trainings in person and charging people for them. I always had a 4-part training program that would go over what an abortion is, the different types of abortion, how to offer grief and loss support, why doulas should like focus on things like funding abortions, but also there's a piece on like political education. And this part looks different depending on who I'm training, because I train people like across time and space. And so when the pandemic started, I got online doing these trainings and my format shifted. I realized I can't have, I can't have people of color. I can't have Black people and white people like in the same learning space, just like off the strength. And so I started to offer trainings for non-white people, and then a training where white people could come. And then the ones that are for non-white people, obviously white people cannot participate in those. And of course, like Black people often choose that, the Black training. And I was really happy to see like the space kind of grow from that area, from that way. But today my work looks like kind of doing those online trainings. And I get down with an abortion doula collective where the training is just one aspect of our work. But there I help develop our training curriculum there. And I still do, you know, my little trainings on the side for anyone who's ready to get down, who's already pro-abortion, right? Of course. But yeah, like I needed some care and some support. I needed some money and I didn't have it. And I wanted to be that kind of doula with those things in mind, so that I could try to give people the abortions that I should have had and not the ones that I did have.
The ones that you should have had, not the ones that you did have. Yeah. I'm really, so I'm struck by, well, one, I want to just like meditate on the word doula, right? So like, and maybe another way to ask this question is like, so if I am coming to you for a training, why am I coming to you? So like, if you want to share like some, like what are some of the reasons that bring people into training? Whether it's like past experiences, people in their lives, they're recently educated, they have some awakening, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But then also like, are there levels to this shit, right? Like among even like your collective, are there folks operating as sort of like, and those levels could look like different things, right? Maybe it's like, this person's working a full-time job, this person's working part-time, this person is a parent, this person is not. Maybe it's a matter of like how much time they're dedicating, or like thinking of organizing stuff, like risk levels that they're comfortable with, things like this. Yeah.
Okay. So there are many different things that could bring someone to a doula space. I think many folks do arrive in a training space because of a negative experience that they had. That's one thing for sure. Another thing is because they're already always kind of showing up in certain like care and emotional support roles. And they just hear, you know, they learn that like, okay, a doula provides informational, physical, and emotional support when giving consent. That's all a doula does. And so there are people, you know, doing that work that aren't naming it as that. So like if I apply to school, I'm gonna need a dissertation doula, someone who can like, you know, literally physically, emotionally, and informationally support me through the process, because it isn't something that someone should have to do alone, like an abortion or like having a baby. Yeah, the lack of care. So the lack of care, but also the traumatic experience and those people who are like carers already, and they're providing a little bit of support. I think people in the midwife world, they have more like anecdotal shit about like certain types, or like certain birth workers are like born, they're not made, or you can't like train someone to do this kind of stuff. I don't have anything to say about midwives, and I do think that, or like I train people, and yeah, not everyone has it, not everyone's got it or something, or not everyone's got it for what even they're trying to do. And I think that there are some like replicatable kind of transferable things about care that like anyone could benefit from. That anyone could benefit from. A lot of birth doulas, right? A lot of people who exclusively do birth, they want to dip their toe sometimes in the abortion world, or they want to be able to support more people in their work. And so they will, you know, ask for training as well. I think other people who care about abortion and reproductive justice, showing up in your community as an abortion doula, that's one way that we can respond to what's happening right now. And yeah, I think people realize that. And so they're also kind of coming to say, like, I'm ready to show up like that. And when I think about like capacity and time, yeah, there are so many different ways to be a doula. Obviously, things like the environment and like the pandemic, they impact how we are showing up. I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought a little bit.
No, you can.
Pandemic, the doulas. Yeah, maybe I'll just pause there for now.
Okay. Word. Yeah, no, thank you. So that's super helpful, right? So there are all these different reasons bringing folks to a training space. And once they get there, right, it sounds like, at least if they're coming to your training, at the very onset, right, like this is being demystified, right? It's and maybe even not necessarily opposite birthing doulas, but just like as an aside, like it's not necessarily like they're walking in the room and you're like, have you been called to this? It's more like, oh, like you think you're capable of providing the emotional, informational, and physical support for folks who are going through this. Let's talk about what that entails. Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about what is necessary for that. I had it's called a values clarification exercise. And on it, I use it about halfway through the training. And this is to see if to assess whether people are ready. It's an assessment that looks like people choosing like on a scale of 1 to 5, 1 being like, really disagree, and then 5 being like really agree. And there are things on there like, I think that a 13-year-old is old enough to choose to have a baby. Or, right, I would be able to support someone who was terminating their pregnancy because they learned their baby was going to be intersex or have certain disabilities, right? Like, so I'm, that is one of the tools that I'm using to like, yeah, help people assess for themselves, but also like, so I can see, I am trying to build a network of abortion doulas across the country, where we're just, you know, we're in a network such that we can help connect abortion havers to the doulas so that I don't have to support someone in Germany, but that like there's someone closer to them for that. Sorry, I can't remember what I was talking about, but it wasn't about the, it's about the training and the time.
I'm trying to think. Yeah, it was training and the time, assessing their readiness to provide that care.
Yeah, I think when it comes time to do that values clarification assessment, folks have a lot of information about destigmatizing abortion, some of the basic facts as it relates to what constitutes abortion, and why it's important, why it's like regular, degular, schmegular healthcare. And I think sometimes folks surprise themselves with their responses. And I really love that activity because it is an opportunity for us to check in, like, what are the things in my way that are preventing me from showing up for people? And right, like something that I think is unique about the training that I'm offering is I'm asking people to think about young people's abortion access, people under the Mason-Dixon line, people who like ain't got no abortion clinic in their town. So you're going to have to figure out how they're going to get from point A to point B. As well as people who don't have the money for it at all. And so I'm trying to provide people with the skills that it would take to support those abortion havers specifically. And that, not only do you have to, you know, be able to articulate the different types of abortion, but you have to have like an awareness. Yeah, an awareness. And I think that some people have that and some people like just do not have that.
Yeah, no, that's super helpful because it's making me think about what you just said about like presenting someone with an instance where like, well, two things. One, what you said a little while ago about like the value statements, because it sounds like you're not just assessing, you know, it's not like in some fucking like identity space where people are like, do you like this band the same way I do? It's like, what I'm assessing is not, I need to assess your sort of like inscrutability when it comes to helping this person do what they want with their body.
Right? Yeah, like going to do something illegal. Are you going to drive someone across state lines? Are you going to give someone information on a secure platform about abortion after the state says that they can't have one where they are? Like, yeah, that is what I'm specifically trying to get at, right? And right now, the only people that I want to talk to about being an abortion doula are the people willing to do that. And I think that was true for me before, but, you know, the stakes are a little bit different. But again, not different if you black, if you live in a place where there ain't no abortion clinics, if you can't pay, you know, the stakes are exactly the same. Exactly the same.
Yeah, it's almost like, yeah, it's this weird thing where it's like, as their capital T, as their stakes get realer, it maybe becomes easier or like more clear how like these have always been the stakes for some niggas, right? And like, oh yeah, like, why am I even necessarily entertaining, like, the hour I could spend convincing this person to use a secure platform, I could just be using that hour to train people who've already sort of arrived to that place of, yeah, fuck them. Like, I'm gonna provide care for this person because they need it. That's really interesting. And what you said recently, like this piece of like, you know, like you present someone with a case of like, how do you get this person from like point A to point B? It's like, it's not enough to even be willing to go against the law or the norm. You also have to be imaginative. Like, you have to be willing to imagine, oh, okay, there's no able, existent like way to get this person from point A to point B. How are we going to create that? How can I be a part of that creation? Like, it seems like the ask is greater, right? Because it's not just like, you know, it's not like you're on a political campaign and you get a fucking list of phone numbers to call, right? It's like, it's, I don't know what the fucking match of that would be, but it's, yeah, it's a lot more.
Yeah.
So, all right. Okay. So I think we sort of like have the flavor for what this work is entailing right now for you. Can you talk a bit about, and not necessarily like a mini crash course or anything like that, what we can assume, and I'll wag my finger if I'm wrong, what we should assume for all of our sakes for this time is, if someone's listening, they have some general idea about what the fuck Roe is and what the past few decades have been like in terms of access, however inequitable, very inequitable. But so maybe our starting point can be, in the next few months, in the next few years, when Roe is overturned and the sort of state-by-state domino effect starts to happen, from where you are in the country, from your experiences thus far, what are you going to be thinking about? And so I guess this question isn't so much like, give us a forecast. It's more just like, all right, so the dominoes are falling and the politicians are screaming, like, at the end of the day, you know, what work will be happening on the ground where you are?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a really amazing opportunity to connect with organizers in the state of Oklahoma. And today, Oklahoma is a place where abortion is banned. We were getting down to business. And some of the things that we talked about in terms of like, when yesterday came for them, like what they would need to do. The first thing that I asked them to do was to pause. Yeah, just to like pause actually and not try to go too fast or like the urgency of the moment. It's been something that we've all been talking about. And even when I was talking with them a few weeks ago and we were training together for those four sessions, like I don't think we could have imagined like today, like it was going to be this way today. But we need to pause first. And then when we think about what we need to do, I mean, we need to make sure that people can still have abortions who need them or make it to their appointments. And so I'm thinking about making sure that folks have information about where to get abortion now that they like can't get it in Oklahoma, for example. I imagine people are looking up the neighboring states around Oklahoma, what those restrictions are like there. So that's really important for people to know. I would also say making sure that if people are showing up this way, like being trained in terms of self-managed abortion. So how to support someone navigating that. But also I want for more people to just to know about SMA. I want people to know about or to know that they can get abortion pills online, that they could get them delivered to a place. I also want for people to be kind of hip to like increasing access to the pills that could be bought online by like getting them and distributing them and making sure that they're available to people. I think that I want to see people getting ready. I mean, we talked about them organizing a network of drivers to get people like to their appointments, maybe beyond Oklahoma. There are a number of reservations there. And one of the kind of hot spots or like issue areas for folks in that community is how to make sure that the folks on the reservations are getting the information. And if it's pills or rides out, like things like that. And so I've been thinking critically with folks about how that's going to look. I've named a few things already. I think those are the things that we need to be doing right now. So funding the abortions and then making sure that people can get to their appointments, wherever those appointments are. And we do not have to rely on, right, Planned Parenthood or abortion funds. Although donating to like your local abortion fund or supporting your local abortion doula collective, that's always a great place to start. And we don't have to like wait on those entities to fund abortion.
Yeah, it makes me want to ask a question around like, so around SMA, but also around, yeah, like this question of like, are we working or are we waiting? Given the like impendingness of the SCOTUS decision and whatnot, and just like your feelers, do you feel like, and maybe this is two different questions for SMA and then like for the rest, like funding abortions, do you feel like outside of say like abortion doula collectives and local funds, do you feel like there's kind of a asleep at the wheel thing happening when it comes to like national organizations like PP or even just like, you know, political party adjacent organizations. I'm thinking of like, you know, all the organizations and quasi organizations that sprung up during the Women's March. Do you feel like it's sort of an asleep at the wheel thing? Do you feel like folks are starting to understand the importance of organizing at the local level? Or do you just feel like actually this shit is going to be fought at the local level and there's no real incentive to be like, whatever, waking people up, people in power, people who are like at the behest of these large funds up?
Yeah, I'll sleep at the. I'm less interested in that stuff. Yeah, I'm less interested. I don't think that it's what we need to be doing right now. Appealing to the interests of people who they can't imagine, they couldn't imagine like a black trans person in the South getting an abortion. Like they couldn't even imagine it. Yeah, I'm not, or as I am kind of weighing in and supporting some of these groups actually, and collectives with with their plans for post Roe after June 23rd, first week of July, like what's it gonna look like? I'm not happy with all of the plans that I'm seeing that look like trying to like appeal to legislators, trying to like talk to senators, doing these call-ins, write-ins. Sending them teddy bear, like I'm really not with any of that shit, and I don't think that's a good use of our time. I when you're saying like it's gonna come down to the local level, or you're kind of asking about that, I do feel that way. I do feel like we need to focus on increasing access to abortion where we are, and that the strategies to address like the ongoing restriction, they are never gonna come from no top of no organization. I know that. And I know also that like the like we those of us who are in community, we know like what's gonna work for us. Like the tools that I was sharing with those folks for Alabama, a lot of it was like either things that I've heard people using somewhere else or things that I've used. Again, those replicatable or transferable things, and like only they can tell me what it's gonna be like to like increase access on the reservation, right? So like there's a lot of room for people to kind of fill it in. Yeah, like the local stuff is just so important. I'm remembering an instance a couple months ago with the local abortion doula collective here. We were starting to talk with a clinic. A local abortion clinic that's not an independent one. And we wanted to talk to them about doulas showing up in the clinic. They were really excited about this program and they took it to, you know, they took it inward, the plans. And when they got back to us, they said, "We really like this. Can you design, make, can you do this, but like make it replicatable for like the Southeast region of our org?" And I was like, no, we can't, we cannot make a doula program for an entire region because it can't, like that's not how, that's antithetical to doula work. That's not how we do doula work. You can't, I'm just, I mean, how harmful, like how incomplete would it be? You know, I can't, I don't know how to, yeah, I can't be overstated that the solutions have got to come from the people locally and not top down. And you know, after we refused to create this program, you know, they let us know that there were roadblocks and that we weren't going to be able to like show up locally the way that we wanted. And while that really cr like, I mean, I felt bad about that. I'm really clear that like we do not need that org to keep doing our work where we are, and like, yeah, we don't need their roadblocks because we got row roadblocks. We got row real roadblocks.
No, hell yeah.
National orgs are really in the
No,
way.
absolutely. Yeah, you know, it's like I just on my little paper, I just underlined the production and reproduction, and I just kept underlining it because it's like that is what they're concerned with. Like they're concerned, like even like replicability and scalability and you know, these words that literally only make sense if you're talking about market capture. And then they're like, yeah, give us a. Can you tell us? Can you pinpoint the market size of people who will need an urgent abortion in 6 months? And it's like, oh, so we're not talking about care anymore. And maybe we never were. Like, maybe we never were. Yeah. And maybe care is something that shifts depending on. Like, this is something I've been thinking about. Like, maybe someone thinks of, like, maybe someone thinks, oh, you know, I can provide care, and that care looks like giving you the number to someone who can provide abortion pills. But if what you really need is someone to go with you across state lines for a medical abortion, then what the care you need is very clear. And someone giving you instructions is no longer care. Like, that's kind of what I want to say, is almost like the idea that there's some, like, you know, cookie cutter standard, like is care really a gradient, or is care just what people tell you they fucking need? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm thinking about the difference in, like, it's not direct services, but it's care. And there can be like care in direct services, but like direct services is not care. Like, and even like increasing information, that's not care. Or like, we're not talking about the same thing there. Yeah, care. Only certain types of care. You know, these national organizations, and unfortunately some people in our communities, they can only consider care in these very narrow ways. And so they can't imagine one that like care might look like something other than direct services. And they cannot imagine that direct services and care are not the same, I think.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Something I've been struggling with at Raheem is developing language to talk about, like, what do we call people who are not police that respond to people when they're in crisis? And there are a lot of terms we have, like first responder, rapid responder, crisis, blah, 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 intervener. And a lot of them are just like so cop laden. But the bigger thing, I think, is like what you pinpointed, which is like, I want to say there's something about like what the, to be quite fucking real, direct services are often operating in a market, right? Like like fucking shelters in New York City, right? You can call them direct services. You can also call them businesses, because they're operated by people who are making the same salaries as bank CEOs, working on the same kind of like demand and profit models. Their bottom line isn't care. Their bottom line is filling beds or like producing some data set to get a new grant. And it's not to even like demonize, it's just to clarify, like, you are not, if you have to choose between responding to what people say they need and responding to what your overseers are telling you to dole out, you will be doling out what the overseers tell you to. And that's just not what care is, no matter how many times we're taught and told that is what it, and that is all it can be, is a set of instructions that have been pre-printed and delivered to you by someone who is authorized to do. So that happened today in Oklahoma. Today's the beginning of this.
I think it's yesterday, if I'm not mistaken, or in like the last 24 hours. Yeah, like last week we was tweeting, abortion is still legal in all 50 states. Now it's looking like abortion is still legal in 49 states. And like that, it's not been that way. Like, at least in 73. Yeah. So, and I wonder, I mean, I'm kind of looking, so the leak, it's interesting to me. I don't know if other people are picking up on this, but the breaking news of the leak, that was louder than like the ban in Oklahoma. And I'm like, wait, what? That's weird. Or like, this is the leak, sure, but like, this is the what the leak was about.
Right, like, isn't like, this the watershed moment? Right.
Right. I'm a little nervous, and I'm like, maybe people maybe people need a little time to catch up to the moment, but yeah, and there is a lot going on this week too. So there's so much.
Yeah. No, that's real. I mean, yeah. I'm sure part of it is that, you know, the timeline is in disarray, but I am also very skeptical. I mean, it's just, you know, it's not unprecedented, but it is in the sense that this is not a modern, it's going to take the bully pulpits and the media heads time to even figure out how they're going to talk about things, you know? Maybe they just haven't gotten their instructions, you know, like.
Right, from their overseers, right?
You know, it's like, who are, you know, like, because, you know, it's like, I don't know, like the Oklahoma Board of Business Executives or whatever is probably like, okay, yeah, abortion's illegal, but look how low our income tax is. Or you know what I mean? I'm just like, what are the sort of like calculations that go into how these things are reported? And obviously these things are always a posit, like what people are experiencing on the ground, which is so scary because unless you're there, and even if you're in the state, depending on where you are, like unless you're there, how could you possibly know? I mean, Oklahoma's a big fucking state. Like, I've been personally intrigued by this idea of crossing state lines, because crossing state lines from Rhode Island and crossing state lines when you're in the middle of Oklahoma, that's a different thing. Like,
right.
It's not like, you know, when you're in the four corners and you got one arm and one leg in each state, baby. Like, you're talking about day-long trips that people cannot afford.
Time. Right. And the waiting periods notwithstanding, they're already, you know, these other burdens of time, these other undue burdens of time with a capital T on abortion havers. And so, yeah, the travel is going to add more time.
So when you are sort of looking, when you're looking forward, I think it's safe to say, and probably not even safe, just common sense to say, things are about to get bad, however you want to think of bad, worse than they are now, for abortion havers, for folks who are hell-bent on helping folks secure abortions. What's your sort of, well, the question I really want to ask is, are you optimistic? Are you cautiously optimistic? Are you pessimistic? I know as doers, you're not supposed to ask, doers these questions, but I think it's fucking important because fucking duh. Yeah.
I appreciate that question, John, and I'm not optimistic at all. Like, I'm not optimistic. I'm focused on abortion havers and increasing access and giving people money when they need it for these procedures. And it's not even that I'm not pessimistic. It's like, I ain't even worried about what they talking about or something. I mean, I am, you know, I'm not like, it doesn't faze me or something, but a lot of it is like noise. And a lot of it, I still feel like our jobs are the same. Our jobs are like what we need to do right now. It's still the same. And I think too, because I don't live in another time and in another place, I can't say what it's like if it was any easier or something to get an abortion. Like, there's a 72-hour waiting period where I am. It does get more restricted than that. It's called Oklahoma, but yeah, I can't worry about it too much, or I can't even think about it that much. Because the things that I'm doing to increase access, that's what's really occupying my brain and my emotional space.
Are you seeing in real time that not happening? So what I mean to say is, are you seeing in real time people, losing the plot, so to say, of like sort of being swept up in the fervor and the understandable fervor and terror and fear, but sort of like that, especially as we talked about it a minute ago, that kind of the media storm, the discourse, that is equal parts industry and grassroots. So like, I don't know. Like, I guess I'm interested in like, is that, do you think for some folks that's kind of enticing to like, I mean, I'm specifically thinking about white people. And even, I mean, niggas too, but I think like there's a kind of, even if you're a coon, there's a kind of implicit understanding that you are on your own. And if you're waiting, that's your fault. But at the end of the day, you're on your own and you have to create something outside of the system that's been provided for you if you want to guarantee something. But for a lot of folks who've lived in a real world, for even a lot of white reproductive, non-black and black reproductive organizers, medical providers, who have not had to sort of, the fight is like material in a way that it hasn't been for some folks. And I'm just wondering, like, do you think for some folks their response to that is to be like, you know, to become a fucking WWE superstar rather than putting their head down and doing the work that isn't glamorous but has to happen?
Yeah, I think that those people are like, when I think like, okay, who are those people? I think that it, like the people who have that experience of the thing, they are the people who's like, the danger of this hasn't come on their door yet. Like they haven't had to, it hasn't touched them. It hasn't been so close to them. And I feel like, you know, I feel a little frustrated because some of the things, you know, that people are just getting hip to like a couple of weeks ago, as within the last couple of weeks, it's people have been feeling and like knowing and even organizing about this for a very long time. Yeah, I don't even know what else I could say about that.
So, and maybe this kind of makes a full circle, keeping in our theme of circles. If I was a Black person listening to this conversation and wanted to become an abortion doula, wanted to show up in my community, whatever that looks like and entails, in my local vicinity to get a little less woo-wah, what would be some places you might send that person, or even some questions you might encourage that person to ask themselves?
Yeah, I would ask my students, like, what kind of doula do you want to be? What kind of abortion doula do you want to be? And who do you want to serve? For me, that mediates how I show up as an abortion doula. And I want to remind folks to do the training, to take a training with me, and then take the training to the next level and put the skills in your community by working with other people. I hope that people are finding and building community, not just with me, but with other people where they live. Like, I like it when people take the information from the training that we did together and then use that to train other people. And again, I want people to, you know, focus on funding abortions and paying for people to make this decision so that they are not deciding, whether to pay their rent or like take care of this healthcare need they have. That cannot be overstated.
Word. No, that's perfect. Thank you, Ash. Thank you so much for coming and kicking it with us. Before I let you go, if you want to share with folks any contact information, where they can find you online, where they can plug into your trainings, that'd be lovely.
Yes. So please follow me on Twitter at Ash_Bash23. You can also hit me up to fund your abortion there. I will fund it for you, your grandma, your daddy. Anybody can get it. It doesn't matter where you are just in gestating. It doesn't matter where you are in time and space. I will fund your full abortion. And then also, if you're interested in training, please also send me a DM and follow my work. Please follow the work of the Mountain Area Abortion Doula Collective, and also get connected to the abortion doulas where you live. There are probably some people out there.
Thanks, Ash.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
Thank you so much for tuning in. And remember, you can follow us on Twitter at abolitionish. That's abolition, ISH. You can follow us on Instagram at abolitionish pod. That's POD. And you can become a monthly supporter of this work by visiting patreon.com/abolitionish. I, John, do not profit. All our money pays our team and our guests, and any monthly donation gets you access to our monthly zine, Endnotes, which is the shit, and gives you an inside peek into the minds of our guests, our team, and the people in our orbit who we love and are thinking with all the time. So, I look forward to seeing you on the other side of something better, and if not, I'll see you next time.